was faced with two questions on the motion to dismiss. One was, were the plaintiff's claims barred by the Texas Workers' Compensation Doctrine, specifically the exclusivity clause? And two, raised later in the pleading process, was the issue of whether or not the concept of preconception tort would bar the Peters claims altogether. Your Honors, in that regard, preconception tort, as the court may be well aware at this point, is a bit of a misnomer, and particularly so in this situation. In nearly all of the cases across the country in which the concept of preconception tort is dealt with, it is a situation in which there is typically an exposure or a conduct that occurs prior to the conception of a child that is...
Before you get to that, I'd like to talk about the affirmative defense or pleading issue regarding the Workers' Compensation Act. Is it...
Certainly, Your Honor.
Should we... the issue can be raised as an affirmative defense, but it could also be raised by a Rule 56 motion for summary judgment. You don't have to file an answer to move for summary judgment, do you?
No, Your Honor, that's true. And
so it, should we remand so that the other side is saying, you know, there was workers' compensation insurance here and we're ready to prove it?
Well, if I think we would be hard-pressed to come before this court if the only issue was the existence of workers' compensation insurance coverage and whether or not TI had adequately established that. But I think it goes much further than that, Your Honor. I think
but what should we do with that issue? Should we assume or not assume, as the trial court did, that there was workers' compensation insurance?
Your Honor, the only thing I can say with regard to the existence of workers' compensation insurance is, to date, I don't believe that Texas Instruments has established the existence of workers' compensation insurance for the period of Mr. Peters' employment at Texas Instruments. So without having seen it, I don't know that it can be assumed. And with regard to the issue of the existence of insurance, because we dispute it, I suppose that the court can assume it and could remand it on those grounds solely, although that would be somewhat of a Pyrrhic victory. The more important issue, Your Honor, I believe, is the second component.
And that's I'm not saying reverse and remand. I'm saying if this
sure.
is the keystone of the Superior Court's decision that needs to be established, either yay or nay, that there's workers' compensation coverage, how do we fill that hole in the record if you're insisting that it be filled? Would it be a remand for the Superior Court to see if that can be decided on the pleadings or by summary judgment? Now, what's the vehicle?
I think you have two hurdles to overcome, isn't that correct? That is, even if your claim is not barred by workers' comp, even if we're able to conclude that on this record, you still have to establish that under Texas law there is a legally cognizable claim for what's been called preconception tort.
That's true, Your Honor.
If there isn't, then it really doesn't matter whether the claim is or isn't barred by workers' comp. Isn't that correct?
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. And I suppose the issue is...
And both of these issues are Texas law issues.
That's correct, Your Honor. As to the existence of insurance and whether or not that would require a remand, if the court determined on all other grounds that the Superior Court below had properly interpreted the issues, would it be necessary to remand to determine the existence of insurance? If the court determined that it didn't matter whether or not there was a compensable claim, if the court determined that, in fact, it didn't matter whether or not Mr. Grady Peters actually suffered an injury that would in any way be cognizable under workers' comp, if the court determined that, in fact, Christopher Peters' claims was in no way derivative of any alleged injury to Grady Peters, then at that point, I don't know that the existence or non-existence of insurance matters. And that's the best way I can deal with that particular issue. And I understand it is a concern because it does directly affect the standard by which the court ruled on the motion for summary judgment.
And you need to tell us what you want to do, because you've raised it in your brief. We have a Superior Court decision that says this is barred by the workman's compensation statute. And if we agree, you still have the outstanding question, well, we don't even know that the workman's compensation statute applies. So you seem to be suggesting we should go ahead and decide if the workman's compensation statute applies, and if it does, that will be the end of that argument.
That's
so to that extent, are you waiving or withdrawing your challenge to the fact that there was no workman's compensation coverage? Because if you're not, then we have to find a way to resolve that on the record.
Your Honor, for purposes of the remand issue, I prefer that the court dealt directly with the issue of the application. So in that regard, if it's necessary for me to withdraw the issue of the existence of insurance for purposes of the procedural aspects of the motion to dismiss, I would rather do that and get to the substantive issues of whether or not there was a claim for workers' compensation and, again, the application or non-application.
Mr. Prado, do you know whether Texas has a procedure like Delaware's whereby the Supreme Court of Texas can entertain issues of law that are certified by the Supreme Court of another state?
I believe that they do, Your Honor. However, I would submit to this court that there are no unresolved issues of any magnitude that the Supreme that the Texas courts have not dealt with. And
you're
haven't
saying the Texas courts have directly spoken to both of these issues?
I believe so, Your Honor.
The Supreme Court of Texas?
I believe the Supreme Court of Texas, Your Honor, has dealt with certainly the workers' compensation issue with regard to whether or not the claim is derivative or a direct claim. And even in the case of Chenault versus Huey, which was the main case that was relied upon by the court below and by the appellees, that court cited the main case that nationally from Illinois, the Illinois Supreme Court, of Renslow versus Mennonite Hospital, in indicating that because there was a special duty with regard to the mother-child relationship. In the Chenault case, a daughter was suing her mother for preconception injuries, alleging that the mother's use of drugs before and during her pregnancy caused the child's birth defects. And what the court ultimately held in that situation is the mother-child relationship in that circumstance made it an issue for the legislature to determine. But otherwise, and again, citing the Renslow decision from Illinois, the Texas Court of Appeals determined that a claim against the third party would indeed be viable. And so it was simply the relationship between the mother and the child that created the issue of the legislative bar that was suggested by the Court of Appeals in that circumstance. And in fact, Your Honor, I think that for purposes of determining that whether or not the life and existence, for example, the Texas Court of Appeals in Delgado versus Yandel specifically indicated that it's certainly not necessary for an injured party, a child, to be known or even in existence at the time that a right an action accrues. Specifically, the court in its concurrence indicated that plaintiff's right to enforce a cause of action came into existence at the moment of her birth, although the event giving rise thereto occurred at an earlier time. Plaintiff's viability at the time of the event resulting in the damage would be wholly immaterial. So I don't think that this is an issue that is paramount for the Texas Court of Appeals or the Texas Supreme Court to deal with. The fact of the matter is the main case that the court relied on in Chenault dealt with a special circumstance between mother and child in which the mother was suing the child. We don't have that here. And in the majority of the courts across the jurisdictions, the vast majority, with the sole exception of the New York courts, have recognized that the issue of preconception tort is not a complex issue. It's just an issue of when did the wrongful death occur, and in fact, does that wrongful, was there a duty that extended to that injured party that claims that right subsequent to the child's birth? And so, for example, in the instant case, the issues perhaps can be dealt with together most easily because Grady Peters, who worked at the Texas Instruments facility from 1980 to 1997, was specifically told by Texas Instruments that they, the chemicals that he was working with were safe and reproductively safe. In fact, Texas Instruments was party to a ongoing series of investigations and examinations into the safety of those chemicals, which had more than 10 years prior established the clear relationship between the chemicals and birth defects. The fact that Texas Instruments knew and told Mr. Peters alone is sufficient for the court to be able to find the existence of a duty. However, I think it's critical for the court to recognize that in this circumstance, the children and offsprings of employees are most certainly foreseeable parties to the conduct of any individual employer. Now,
well, under Texas law, at least as it's been explained to us, whether or not injury to a fetus that comes into being after the parent is exposed to the harmful chemicals, it is the case, at least here, that without the injury to the father, there would be no claim of injury by the fetus. To finish the question, contrast this case to a hypothetical where, let's assume, the mother was employed at Texas Instruments and was exposed to these chemicals. She was pregnant and was exposed during the entire 9 months of the pregnancy, or even maybe years before as well, and the child is born with birth defects. You know, that at least is a case where you can argue that the injuries that occurred took place both simultaneously, both to the parent and to the child. But in this case, there was just an injury to the parent. There was no child. There was no fetus. That didn't occur until years later. So how, in these circumstances, can you argue that the fetus's claim is not derivative?
Because there actually was no injury whatsoever to Grady Peters, Mr. Peters, the employee, Your Honor. In this instance, Mr.
Peters... If there wasn't any injury, then how could there have been injury to the child that was work-related?
As the science will clearly show, and this is fairly well established, not only by our experts, as they will testify, but industry-wide, Your Honor, the changes that took place to Mr. Peters took place actually to his sperm, to his reproductive system. He would in no way ever be able to recognize an injury on his own unless and until he decided to have a child with his wife.
And I guess the answer or the response would be, so what? That's still a derivative claim.
Oh, absolutely not, Your Honor. In fact, I think that the cases that discuss these types of issues specifically point to instances where you have a mother who has a child in utero, injured on the job, allegedly slips and falls on the job, falls and hits her stomach, gives birth to a child. The courts have specifically held that those child's injuries were not derivative of the mother's
slip and fall. Right, which is not this case.
I understand, Your Honor, but in this case, there's a suggestion that there must have been some injury to Mr. Peters. But in fact...
Didn't you tell us a moment ago that the Texas Instruments and its peer group competitors were telling their employees that they may be exposed to risk of physical harm?
No, Your Honor. What I said was that they were exposing their employees to chemicals that would cause genetic and birth defects to the children of the employees.
So, on the one hand, you're arguing that employees were given specific warning of that risk, and yet, on the other hand, you're telling us that that risk never eventuated in the case of this child's father.
No, what I'm telling Your Honor is that the employer had specific knowledge and specifically told their employees that there was no risk. So they were not given warning of the risk that the chemicals could cause.
Oh, there was a no-risk warning, not a risk warning.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And I think it's important to understand that for both purposes of workers' compensation...
Would it have mattered, by the way, to your case if the warning had been to the opposite effect?
In other words, had the company given the warning to Mr. Peters and
yes,
he continued to work?
No, be sure to wear a protective clothing. You know, there's a risk of genetic damage if you don't.
From Christopher Peters' perspective, Your Honor, I think that it would be a question of whether or not the conduct of Texas Instruments was sufficient to protect the offspring of its employees in terms of whether or not the protective clothing was sufficient, whether or not the procedures to prevent the inhalation and the dermal contact with the chemicals was sufficient. Your Honors, I'm well into my rebuttal time at this point, but I'm concerned that the court understand that it is our position that Grady Peters suffered no injury whatsoever. And in fact, the science is clear that the chemicals that caused the birth defect at best caused change to Mr. Peters, Grady Peters' sperm, that resulted in changes to genetic damage to the fetus at the time of conception.
Well, it certainly caused a change that had an adverse impact on the child, correct?
That's correct.
That's undisputable. The only question is whether you call it an injury or an insult or something else.
Well, number one, there's an issue, number one, whether our science is correct, that it's the injury to the sperm, and our scientists, our experts, have indicated that the sperm is specifically not part of Mr. Peters. He certainly could not assert a claim, and that's part of the second part of the equation that we've asserted. I see my time is running, Your Honor.
No, it's not. I'm saving you a minute and 30 seconds. So you can finish your answer to this question, then you'll still have a minute and a half or whatever it was left.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's part of the workers' compensation issue as well. Mr. Peters could never have gone to his workers' compensation carrier and said, I have a work comp claim. The question would be, what are your damages? What injury did you sustain?
How can we agree or disagree with that statement? What in the record supports that claim?
Well, it's not my burden to establish that. It's Texas Instruments' burden to establish that, in fact, Mr. Peters could have had a claim, not just that there was insurance available to him.
Well, you've been stating this as affirmative fact. Now you're saying we have to treat it as affirmative fact because the other side had the burden and they didn't meet that burden. What is it?
Your Honor, we believe that we can prove, if we get past the stage of a summary judgment, these facts is true. I'm stating them as affirmative facts because we've pled them in our complaint. Now, we've called it an insult to Mr. Peters' reproductive system, Grady Peters' reproductive system, and Texas Instruments has called that an injury. The question, I think, before the court is that compensable? And Texas Instruments has neither established compensability or that any such claim has ever been accepted by a workers' compensation carrier as compensable. And I would submit to this court that...
Well, the minute and a half you've been given presupposes if you're going to give us a short answer.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Catherine Mayer McCarter in English on behalf of the defendant below, Appalachian Texas Instruments. I have with me today my co-counsel, Mary Wells of the firm Wells Anderson and Race, and also Ms. Chappelle that argued below as well. And with the court's permission, I'll turn it over to Ms. Wells to handle the argument today.
Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Before you get started, let's start where the other side left off. Let's assume that Mr. Peters didn't know that he had suffered any kind of injury or genetic change, whatever, however one seeks to label it, until his child was born. And now he knows that there was, and he has reason to believe that that genetic change was occasioned by exposure to chemicals at Texas Instruments. Under Texas law, would he be able to claim workers' comp as a consequence of the injury to himself and derivatively on account of the injury to his child?
Well, I think you've asked a couple of questions, and let me try to get to them. I think the answer to the first question, could he make a claim? The answer is yes, he can make a claim. Now, the exclusivity bar of workers' compensation is not dependent on whether he gets money for his claim. The exclusive remedy is there to protect an employer from tort suits because the employee may make a claim for injuries that he has sustained on the job.
The claim wouldn't be time barred under Texas law?
I believe it is. Your Honor, I can't give you a straight answer to that question. I can't give you an answer that I believe is accurate to that question, well, and I apologize for that.
We've been told the whole idea that a claim could have been made is fanciful because it would have resulted in no workers' comp remedy. And that's what I'm trying to assess here.
But the statute of limitations issue in terms of whether he would be barred because of the passage of time is not determinative of whether the exclusive remedy of workers' compensation was available to him at some point in time. I think what you're focusing on is when did he discover
right.
a problem.
Right, and I'm asking you to assume that he didn't discover it until his child was born and the birth defects were identified and traceable.
At that time, the workers' compensation bar, the statute of limitations at that point in time would not have run.
So there would be.
Because he was still employed at the time that Christopher Peters was born. He was still employed at Texas Instruments okay. at that point in time.
So he would not be time barred. Would he be entitled to a recovery of some amount?
I can't answer that because that is a matter that is determined within an administrative process put in place by the legislature of the state of Texas.
Give us some help on that.
Understood.
Because if we extend Justice Jacobs' hypothetical, right, and we make some analogy mm-hmm. to Delaware law, we know if someone loses their finger,
yes.
their leg, their mm-hmm. arm, there's a schedule.
Right.
And we know if they have a soft tissue injury, it's compensable.
Right.
Realistically, based on your knowledge of Texas law, if you came in with this claim, would it be compensable?
I don't have a case that is on point. I do have a case from another jurisdiction which recognizes that sterility may be compensable. And that's the logical analogy for us to make here is that, let's say, Mr. Peters was rendered sterile.
Did you put it in your brief?
It is not in our brief, Your Honor. And I do have a citation to it here. And it may be that Ms. Chappelle is going to hand it to me at this moment.
That's all right. And you can.
Thank you. If I could bring it, may I give it to the clerk?
You can send us all the citation.
I'll do that.
But,
Your Honor, I will tell you that it's the only case that we found like it. And
well,
it was one sterility case.
It would have been helpful to read it before the argument, but be that as it may, is the holding that sterility was compensable because you used the word may earlier?
There were peculiar facts in that case, as I recall. Mr. Pell, are you going to hand me your memo?
I do not have that case. I know it's an Arkansas case, but I do have a citation for the other question, Your Honor, about this, the time bar issue.
Thank you. Let me have it. Thanks.
Well, let's put the time bar aside.
Exactly.
It doesn't really matter if you're time barred from a claim that never existed in the first place.
Correct.
And we're being asked to affirm a decision that said your exclusive remedy is under workman's compensation.
Correct.
And our logical question is, could you have recovered under the workman's compensation statute?
I think the question really is whether the bar applies as opposed to whether a particular injury appears on a schedule of benefits under the rubric of the Compensation Act.
Well, and I understand that very lawyer-like answer, which means, in plain English, it may be unfortunate if you can't recover anything, but that's the way it goes.
Indeed, we have that possibility, that if a claim were presented, it would be recognized as one that is an injury on the job for which no money is payable. That could be, certainly.
An insult.
An insult, an injury. You know, we have been looking at the words, and what does it mean?
Well,
but I think it...
To expand momentarily on the phrase that Justice Holland used, if at the end of the day, under Texas law, there would be, as a matter of reality, no recourse to workers' comp.
Correct.
Then, basically Mr. Peters and his child are in a catch-22.
Correct.
In those circumstances, if we were to analogize this case to what would happen under Delaware workers' compensation mm-hmm. law, the right. plaintiffs would have a very good argument that they are protected by the tort system.
Mm-hmm. But in Texas, that is not necessarily so, because if we look at the Texas law with respect to whether a duty in tort exists under these circumstances, it is clear that the Texas courts have not recognized a duty associated with an act which caused an injury or insult or malformation or distortion of Mr.
You agree with the plaintiffs in that.
How so?
You agree with the plaintiff's position in that regard.
I think that our interpretation of it is quite different, because I would argue...
Well, they say there was no injury.
I'm sorry?
Then you say there
was
no injury.
No, I say that there is distinctly an injury, and whether you call it a mutation or an insult, all of it amounts to an injury, regardless of whether there are symptoms. And the fact of an injury is not dependent upon whether Mr. Peters was symptomatic or asymptomatic.
Well, if there was an injury that's work-related, how could there not be recovery under the Texas law? Why? What under the Texas law would permit someone to demonstrate a work-related injury and still get no recovery?
Well, I think the issue would be within the administrative process itself, whether there is a determination that there was no impairment for which compensation was given or was appropriate, or whether there was time off work because of the injury
Let's go back to your sterility example, and let's assume we're under Texas law. Someone comes in and they say, it's undisputed, I'm sterile. And it's as a result of something that happened to me on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Under Texas law, is that compensable?
I believe it would be compensable. And it may be that there aren't any lost wages benefits associated with it, but that disability in some form could be available for it.
Is there anything in the record that shows that injuries like this or insults like this have been compensable in Texas?
No, there is not, Your Honor.
So, well, to jump to a related subject then, let's assume that Mr. Peters suffered a compensable injury and would be entitled to some sort of workers' compensation award under Texas law for that injury. Mm-hmm. His child now, you know, which is born later, that is years after the injury, let's assume, has birth-related defects that can be traceable to the same cause that injured the father. If the father, I gather your argument would be that is a derivative,
yes.
The child's claim is derivative.
Correct. It
and,
is,
and
because
my question is, why is that a bar? That is, if the father can recover, then why can't the child?
If the father can recover, the child might be able to recover a dependent injury, because the injury that Christopher has, according to the plaintiff's pleading, is entirely dependent upon damage or injury to Grady Peters.
Right, I understand that. So the issue of whether or not the child's claim is derivative doesn't matter unless it's established that the father would have no remedy.
Correct. Yes, correct. Correct. So perhaps I could go back to some of the other questions that were put to counsel for Mr. Peters. First of all, the issue about whether there should be a remand to determine whether Texas Instruments is truly a subscriber, I think is no longer before the court, that we do not have to deal with that. Justice Jacobs asked the question about whether Texas has a procedure to receive a certified question from a court like this to answer a question presented. The answer is no, they do not. They will accept matters submitted by federal courts. They have no specific procedure for receiving questions from any other court besides a federal court. The plaintiff cited to the Chenault case, and I would urge a second or third reading of that case, because in the Chenault case, the court cited to Renslow. Recall that Renslow was the Illinois case where a preconception tort was recognized in Illinois.
The Chenault and the blood transfusion case?
Yes.
Okay.
And Chenault cites to Renslow, but doesn't follow it. And I think that is quite significant that Chenault looks at it, but does not follow it. The Delgado case that was cited by plaintiff's counsel is a prenatal injury case. And of course, we know that the courts in many jurisdictions have carved out special circumstances whereby a fetus who sustains an individual injury, an injury that is separate and distinct from the injury that might be sustained by the mother, has a cause of action in some cases, as long as the child is born alive. Some states would recognize the cause of action if the child was stillborn, but when a child is born alive, they can recover many places for a prenatal injury, but that is a different circumstance than what is presented to this court in looking at what Texas would do with respect to something which is truly a distinct preconception injury related to chemical exposures by the father that result in this injury to his sperm. Plaintiff's counsel raised an issue with respect to some affirmative statement by Texas Instruments to Mr. Peters that the chemicals he was working with were safe. That is not a matter that was pleaded or raised with the court below. That is an issue that truly has been waived. But regardless of that point,
can you help me understand, if there's no certification process, then our role is to predict what the Texas Supreme Court would decide. on an issue that it has yet to address.
Yes.
And that is, and particularly here, preconception liability.
Correct.
Why would the Texas court not accept that proposition that there should be when there are statements in Roberts v. Williamson, the fundamental purposes of our tort system are to deter wrongful conduct, shift losses to responsible parties, and fairly compensate deserving victims?
I think the answer to your question is that in Texas, the courts look to a very broad scope of criteria in determining whether a duty is to be imposed. The courts in Texas have told us in many cases this is a question for the legislature and not the courts. In the Chenault case, they look at it in a common law duty question and recognize that the very difficult questions presented there when you're looking at whether a child can sue her mother for the mother's behavior before and during pregnancy, can she sue and recover damages for that very egregious behavior, that is a matter that should be looked at by the legislature and not the courts. In Texas, they are not looking at foreseeability as the keystone and only consideration in determining whether a duty exists. Granted, the Texas courts have taken a very narrow approach to determining whether duty exists in a particular case. And if they find as a matter of law that there is no foreseeability, they go no further. But if there is a potential for foreseeability, then they will look at a very wide range of factors related to balancing the risks involved and the social concerns involved.
So in the absence of direct guidance from the Texas Supreme Court under a certification procedure, we're in the position of having to tiptoe through the tea leaves.
I think that
what a Texas court would do in a multi-factor balancing test.
Yes, I think that's exactly right, Your Honor. And the Texas courts have demonstrated time and again that they take a very cautious approach to extending duties beyond those which have been clearly recognized in the past. And so I hope I've answered your question. When we look at the Roberts case and the Chenault case in particular, we have the identification of the issues that the Texas courts will consider when they are looking at whether a duty exists. And the one thing that is not precisely mentioned in those cases, but we know from the treatises and other decisions, is that the costs associated with spreading the risk are also a factor to be considered when we are looking at expanding liability in any given circumstance. And when we're looking at those costs as well as the other factors, that truly is a matter of very complex social policy best left to the legislature or perhaps the courts of Texas. If there aren't further questions,
thank you very
I'll
much.
Stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. I will try to cover a lot in a very brief time. Number one, I have to very strongly disagree with the stated purpose of counsel for TI's description of the purpose of the Texas Workers' Compensation Act, that it's to prevent torts by third parties against employers. In fact, the Texas Workers' Compensation Act, like Delaware's and every other Workers' Compensation Act, is put in place as the court in Texas Workers' Compensation Commission versus Garcia stated, to avoid the necessity of having to fight about causation and liability between employers and employees. Your Honors are very different, very, very difference, significant difference between sterility and the carrying or the transmission of chemicals in the semen and sperm of a father that causes a significant birth defect to a child who is an entirely separate and different being who is significantly injured and will otherwise have no right of injury.
I just want to make sure I understand your position in on one particular issue. You do argue, or your client argues, that that Mr. Peters, the father, would have no compensable claim under the Texas Workers' Compensation Act. Is that correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Not only did he suffer no injury that's okay. identifiable.
And you also argue that notwithstanding that, the child's claim would not be derivative of the father's claim. Is that correct?
That's true for two reasons. And if I may finish that, Your Honor, I'm out of time, but there is two reasons why that's true. One is, even if, and we strongly assert that Mr. Grady's condition could not be considered an injury, it is the same process, the transmission of chemicals through his sperm and semen, that caused the injury to his child. The child's injury is in no way dependent upon anything that happened directly to Mr. Peters himself. And as the court has held in across the country in many situations that we've cited to this court, where there is an injury to the fetus and the mother, or the fetus and the parent arising out of the same set of circumstances, the case involving the bat bites, for example, there is no bar because one employee would be barred and another injured party as a result of the same conduct.
But we would have, assuming we agree with you on all of that, we would still have to determine that Texas would recognize preconception tort liability to reverse.
Your Honor, again, I agree, but I think that there is nothing that says that Texas, there is no case that says that Texas would not accept in a situation between mother and child. That was the Chenault case.
Yes.
I think you would have to find that Texas would accept
Texas
it, yes.
would recognize the claim.
Yes, Your Honor.
Independent of workers' comp.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. The court will take the matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.
Thank you, Your Honor.